That every single one of us have those days, weeks, those periods where we're going through just difficulties, don't we? Times that are just hard and kind of stressful and painful. Maybe you've experienced a day similar to the hard hat employee as he reported a particular work day through an actual accident report. This bruised and bandaged workman related this experience. He said, "When I got to the building, I found that the hurricane had knocked off some bricks around the top. So I rigged up a beam with a pulley at the top of the building, and I hoisted up a couple of barrels full of bricks. And when I had fixed the damaged area, there were a lot of bricks left over. Well, then I went to the bottom, and I began to release the line. Unfortunately, the barrel of bricks was much heavier than I was. And before I knew what was happening, the barrel started coming down, jerking me up. I decided to hang on since I was too far off the ground by then to jump. And halfway up, I met the barrel of bricks coming down. And they were coming fast, and I received a hard blow on my shoulder. Well, I continued all the way to the top, banging my head against the beam and getting my fingers pinched and jammed in the pulley. Well, when the barrel hit the ground hard, it burst its bottom, allowing the bricks to fall out. I was now heavier than the barrel. So I started coming down again at high speed. And halfway down, I met the barrel coming up fast and received severe injuries to my shins. When I hit the ground, I landed on the pile of spilled bricks, getting several painful cuts and deep bruises. And at this point, I must have lost my presence of mind because I let go of my grip on the line. And the barrel came down fast, giving me another blow on my head and putting me in the hospital. I respectfully request sick leave." And he needs to get it, doesn't he? This is a lot like, y'all watched those Roadrunner cartoons years ago? You remember Wile E. Coyote? This was his plight every week. Well, you've had days like that, haven't you? In fact, some of you've had periods like that. Difficulties where pain and where discomfort just sort of has this way of almost taking over. And it's the forefront of your mind. You know, it's hard to get rid of. It's hard to quit thinking about it. And frankly, it's those times that can sort of, they can kind of taint at least how we feel about God. When you're going through times like that and those kinds of difficulties, you start asking some hard questions. You start saying, "Lord, don't you see? Don't you see what I'm going through? Don't you care? Won't you do something?" And at these times, if someone gives you, you know, chicken soup for the soul to read to sort of boost your spirits, you say, "Well, thanks, but frankly, that's just not going to cut it. You know, I need more than some sort of emotional lift or boost. I need to know something. I need to know that God knows, that he knows what my plight is, that he sees what it is that I'm going through, and that he cares." We're entering the holiday season, and I know most of you have read about how difficult it is for so many people during the holidays, right? How a lot of people go into a depression during this time frame. These are times where you're supposed to be thankful, right? And grateful and happy and Christmas and family and all these kinds of things that go along. And yet, a lot of times, for a lot of people, this is when the barrels, bricks, and the beams begin to just sort of come down hard on them. And it's difficult and it's painful. And you just get wave after wave, and you start asking, "So what do I do with this? What do I do about it?" The Psalms frequently address people that are going through those types of circumstances, people just like you and I. And David certainly had his share of difficulties and hard times, times where his shins got banged and shoulder got slammed. In the holidays, for the next few weeks, what we're going to do, we're going to look at several of the Psalms. We're going to see what God has to say to us about these kinds of things. But especially and particularly, because it is the holidays and because we are gearing up for Christmas, it's good for us to get that focus back onto what do these Psalms not only have to tell us about our life, but about Christ. What do we see and learn from him that makes us not only enjoy the holidays, but sustains us through the hard times as well and the difficulties? You know, when you come back to Christ, ultimately, this is the biggest reminder you get. Friend, God sees. He sees what you're going through, and he cares. And the very fact that he sent his son to be with us is that proof and that evidence. And we're going to pick that tone, that resonance up from Psalm chapter 40. So if you haven't turned there, let's go there together. We're going to kind of work our way through this psalm. David begins it by just commenting on the fact that he is going to stop for a minute and he's looking back on his past. And in doing so, he remembers something. You know, I've been in difficulties before and God rescued me. You see, verse 1, he says, I waited patiently for the Lord. I'm going to stop right there. Because a lot of times when we're reading a passage like this, we go, okay, yeah, David, you waited. All right, move on. No, you got to stop there. You got to linger on these words for just a minute. Because I think, frankly, our translations, it's difficult to really give you the oomph, the emotion that goes into this. If I was going to write my own translation, I'd put it like this. I waited for the Lord. It's that idea that goes on. An accurate translation would be waiting, I waited. There's a redundancy there because how long this suffering that he remembers, how long he went through that. And he's, you know, despite the circumstances, he's being patient. But where are you, God? Where are you? I keep waiting and I don't see you. And yet the verse continues. And he inclined to me and he heard my cry. I love that imagery. He inclined to me. Anybody that's been around children, you do this, or you've experienced this, where someone comes up and you're going to give them your full attention. What do? You kind of bend over. Or maybe in some cases, you even kneel down so that you can get eye to eye with them. And in doing so, you're communicating something. I am paying attention to you. I hear you. And that's where David is. He inclined to me, and he heard what I was saying. Verse 2, he brought me up out of the pit of destruction, out of the miry clay, and he set my feet upon a rock, making my footsteps firm. Every single one of you has been through that, haven't you? Where you're in that real slippery place, and all of your concentration goes towards just getting the next foot down and not falling down, of not completing that process. You're just very deliberate. And when you get that opportunity to get off of it, whether it's mud or ice or something, you've got that solid footing now. There's just something that bolsters you. You don't have to worry and think about your actual walking anymore. You just go forward. Well, as David is stopping to think, he's remembering, you know, I've been through that miry clay before, and you know what you did? You brought me out of it, and you put me on something solid, something I could really walk on, I could stand on in confidence. Verse 3, he put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God, and many will see and fear and will trust in the Lord. See, every time he remembers back, he's like, oh, that was another experience. And that was another time you came to, and there was another time. And every time there's this means by which he could exalt God, it's a new story that he can give, that he can sing to others. And as he pauses to remember, you know what this is doing? He's cultivating his faith. If you want to grow like a flower or something, you not only have to water it, you have to till the soil. You've got to cultivate that for it to grow. David says, my faith, when I'm going through these long periods where I got to wait, it's cultivated as I remember what you've done for me, O Lord. Verse 4, how blessed is the man who has made the Lord his trust and has not turned to the proud, nor to those who lapse in the falsehood. You know, we can relate to this too. You run into difficulties. You have that hard season or that temptation to despair. A lot of times it's very easy to just instantly go to what's practical or what will immediately give you pain relief. You know, whatever that may happen to be. Something else that you maybe can find a hope in. A great illustration of this, you go back into your Old Testament, a fellow named King Asa. And the scriptures say he was a good king. And he was over the southern kingdom of Israel, Judah. And there was at one point, Ethiopia decided to come against him. And the Ethiopians brought a 1,000,000-man army. That is a lot of people. And you think Asa got scared? You better believe he did. It's like you're a high school football team and you get word this week you're playing the University of Alabama. You know something. We're dead. We are not going to make it through this. So what did he do? He had nothing else he could do. He just went to the Lord. He said, God, you got to show up. You got to do something. And the Bible tells us he did. God showed up and he stopped this million man army from coming and taking over his country. Now, what's interesting is years later, he had another incident, a smaller army. It was the northern kingdom of Israel was at odds with him, and he was coming to do battle with Asa. And you know what Asa did? He didn't call on God. He got out his wallet. He went over to the king of Assyria, and he said, I'm going to pay you to come help me out. And that was a problem because God said, you're not going to trust in other nations. You're not going to do that. But Asa began to look around at the circumstances, and he said, this is not looking good. And so I'm going to take matters into my own hands, and this is practical. And you want to know what's interesting? It worked. It worked. The Syrians came. They routed them. Asa was not subjected to the northern kingdom. And yet, one of the things the Bible says is God was not pleased with Asa at that point. In fact, we learn that he struck him with a very painful disease. And then when he had that disease, this is his epitaph. He still did not seek the Lord, but instead he sought the physicians. Now the problem was not going to see a doctor. That wasn't it at all. The problem was he put his trust in something else and in someone else. And that is when we too can cross the line. Go to if you get sick, I'm the first one to tell you, go see a doctor. All right, go get that taken care of. But we don't put our trust in that. We come back to the Lord. And our lives, we're Americans. We have this propensity to want to go for what's efficient, right? What works and what works as fast as possible. And yet, one of the things the scriptures remind us over and over is our lives are not necessarily to be about what's efficient. In fact, our lives aren't necessarily to be about being pain-free or difficulty-free or stress-free even. Our lives are to be about glorifying the Lord. That needs to be what's paramount with us. And as a result, a lot of times I think we can trust in a lot of different things. We can trust in our money. We can trust in our jobs. We can trust in our health. We can trust in our circumstances. We can trust in just, a measurement of what is the better, higher than the not better, success. And we can begin to even measure our lives by those things if we're not careful. But God shows us that's not my perspective, not on life. That's not what I measure things by. In fact, sometimes you might be in a great deal of pain or difficulty, and you might be dead center of God's will right there. See also David, Joseph, Job, Jesus. Well, as the verse or the chapter continues, David's going to do something else. As he's talking about, here's how God rescued me, he's going to reflect on this a little more and reflect on God's works for him. Verse 5, many, O Lord my God, are the wonders which you've done and your thoughts toward us. There is none to compare with you, and if I would declare and speak of them, they would be too numerous to count. Isn't it interesting that Thanksgiving by its very nature demands reflection? You have to stop and you have to think back. You've got to remember. And that's something we don't do very much, is it? We get in the car, first thing we do is we turn on the radio, whether it's music or talk radio or CD or book or whatever, and we immediately get our minds into something else. You get home, we'll often immediately go onto the computer, on the internet, or onto the TV or something like that. And it almost robs us of some of these quiet moments that we've got where we can stop and we can do like David and say, okay, wait. Let me just think for a little bit here. Let me do some remembering. What has God done for me? And it's important for our faith. It builds our faith. In fact, what we find in this psalm is that David says that by remembering through thanksgiving, it actually inspired him to want to obey. Verse 6. Sacrifice and meal offering you've not desired. My ears you've opened, which means you've made it to where I hear your word and I can understand it. Burnt offering and sin offering you have not required. Now, you remember, we just finished Leviticus talking about these different sin offerings and so forth. But you see the heartbeat of what's going on here? It's more than just perfunctory actions. It's about the heart, isn't it? In fact, when you read that, you can almost go right back to, I wonder if David wasn't remembering 1 Samuel 15, I think it is, where Saul had defeated an army. And in doing so, he had acquired all these animals and people. And God had given him very specific instructions. You don't keep any of this stuff. You get rid of it. But Saul began to look and he goes, you know, those are some pretty good cattle we got over here. And we could do a lot of work with that. This is a very practical thing if we kept that and harnessed it and used it. And here's some weak ones. We'll sacrifice those. That's what we'll do. We'll kill these off, but we'll keep these. And God approached him, reprimanded him severely, and said, no. Your life is not about efficiency. Your life is not about practicality. He says, your life is about me and obedience unto me. Verse 7, David says, well, then I said, behold, I come. If you're a note taker, this is a great place in your Bible to write this note. Just put, this is the climax, the word climax right here. That's the high point of this psalm. Because what David is doing here is, remember, he's the king. He is the sovereign king. Nobody tells him what to do. And yet he's going to come, submit himself before God. He prostrates himself down and he says, I'm yours. I come. Everything about me, I give over to you. And there's an emotion here. It's kind of hard to express. Sometimes I think in just our reading it, maybe it's hard for us to identify or get the feeling that's intended behind here. But he says, my gratitude is so great that I give you the greatest offering I can, all of me. Me in my entirety. That's what I'll do. Sounds a lot like Romans 12, doesn't it? Present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice. That's what David's doing. You've got all of me. It goes on, in the scroll of the book it is written of me. So he says, when you read God's word and you see his law, it's like you're talking about me because that's what I want to do. Verse 8, I delight to do your will, O my God, and your law is within my heart. He says, God, you took the first action. You delivered me. You were the instigator here. And so I'm going to respond by my obedience and doing whatever it is you want. You sort of get the feeling here in the next few verses. Verse 9, I proclaim glad tidings of righteousness in the great congregation. Behold, I will not restrain my lips, O Lord. You know. I've not hidden your righteousness within my heart. I've spoken of your faithfulness and your salvation. I've not concealed your loving kindness and your truth from the great congregation. You, O Lord, will not withhold your compassion from me. Your loving kindness and your truth will continually preserve me. See, again, he's seeing what God has done, and he says, that makes me want to talk. I want to brag a little bit on God, talk about what it is that he's done and what he's doing. You know, I've never mentioned this before because I've never had cause, but I went to college at Mississippi State University. And you know that I probably never said that before because they've never been good at football before. And this year, they happen to make it all the way up to, what is it, number one. They bounce in there between 1 and 4 or something like that. And I just keep thinking about all my college friends and how they're all probably singing the praises of the university. You know, it's like, Hail State. And everyone's excited because, you know, things, because they're seeing something happen here. And that's what David is like. When he thinks about what God has done, hail God. He's delivered and he's come through. That's what the Psalms are meant to do. They're meant to make you feel it, to come in here and to sort of know what this is like. I'll tell you a story that I think encapsulates the essence of what I'm talking about when I talk about this sort of a feeling. And how David wanted to respond to God. It's been a number of years back. We had a couple that was in our church. They've since moved on. But they had a young boy. And all of a sudden they noticed he was just very ill. They took him to the doctor. And the doctors couldn't find out what was going on. But it wasn't one of these, take him to the doctor, and then go home. It was take him to the doctor and get him to the hospital. So they go to the hospital and they begin to look him over and they're running all these tests. And he is his health is rapidly deteriorating. And then they came to find out he's going through liver failure. And we have no idea why, and we don't know how to stop it. And in essence, this family was told by the doctors, your son is going to die. Unless he could get a liver transplant. But, I mean, we can't wait. You're going to lose him. And they're sitting in the hospital reeling from shock. You know, 5 days ago, this was not on their radar. And now this is where they are. And so, what do you do? Well, there was a room next to them, and a family came into that room also. And this family had actually been in a car wreck. The mother had been in a car wreck with her son. And I think she was injured, I don't remember, but the child was severely injured, a young boy. And he was dying. And so you have these two rooms here, in the emergency room, with these young boys that are dying. And what do you do? And of course, each of the parents, they're out in the hall, they're in the room, and they're kind of seeing what the other person's going through, and they can definitely sympathize with one another. Because it's what you're feeling, I'm feeling. And then eventually the boy who was in the car wreck, he passed away. He died. And the mother and father, just in their intense grief, you know, they looked over at this other family, and they said, here's what we want you to do. We want you to take our son, and we want you to take out his liver and give it to that boy. Ours is gone. Let him live. And the doctors did that. And they saved that boy's life. I didn't know it. The liver will regenerate. And it regenerated within his body. And that boy lived. In fact, we had a Sunday in which the father lifted his son up so the entire church could see how God had delivered. But I'll tell you what, if you were that parent whose child lived because their child died, how do you think you could feel to those parents? What do you think you'd do? What would you want to do? You think you'd want to write them? Kind of let them know, look what our son has done. Look how he's growing. Look how he's well. You think you'd want to follow up with them? Do you have any problems? Do you have any needs? Because if you do, you call me first. You call me before your family. Let me pay for them. I'll do whatever I can to help you out. You know, that's what you would want to do because of your gratitude for the sacrifice of what this one gave for your sake. That's Psalm 40. That's what David says. You gave. You delivered. You provided. You know what I want to do? Whatever. Whatever you want, whatever you need, whatever you ask. That's what I want my response to be. That's the feeling here. But within the psalm, we take a little turn. We've been talking about David remembering and reflecting, seeing how God rescued, but he's going to do something now. He's going to come down out of the thinking world, and he's going to re-enter earth. He's coming back into the reality of life on this planet and the difficulties that he encounters in and through them. And so, reflection time is over. It's time to wake up. Verse 12, he says this, evils beyond number have surrounded me. My iniquities have overtaken me, so I'm not able to see. And they're more numerous than the hairs of my head. And my heart has failed me. That's the cycle repeated, isn't it? It was hard, and then God rescued me, I remember, but now I'm back in it. And God rescued me, but now I'm back in it. And it just continues to go over and over and over. And the rest of the psalm, what David winds up doing is just, once again, begging God. God, waiting, I'm waiting. I need you to step up again, just like you've done in the past. Now, whenever I read something like this, I don't know why. Maybe I'm cynical. Maybe I'm jaded in some ways. But I'll read this something like this, and I'll walk away, and I'll think, okay, Who can live this? I mean, really. Delight to do your will when I am in tremendous pain. I don't really delight in very much, except to get out of pain. How do you do this? I remember there was a comic strip, the Peanuts comic strip. It was Lucy who made this profound statement. She said, "Charlie Brown, pain hurts." And I said, "Amen, sister." It does. And it goes right to the forefront of your mind, doesn't it? It's hard to get past it. It's hard to not think about it when you're going through it. And the difficulties, they wear us down. They remind us of our mortality. They remind us of our inability, of our fragility, all those illities, you know, that come around. And emotionally, I think we can feel a lot like David here. We can, when we're going through the difficulties. But can we really delight when it hurts? And as I was thinking through this, I just took some time to pause and reflect and think about our church over the years and just some of the different things that we've gone through here. Can you really do this? Delight to do what God wants when your child hates you, when your child won't speak to you? Can you do this when your loved one continues to make very destructive choices over and over and over again, and it kills you on the inside? Can you do it when you're being faithful and you just don't see results? When things aren't working right? Can you do it when your money is getting worse, not better? Or maybe your business, you're putting double time in now, and it's like the harder you work, the further behind you get. When your health just continues to spiral downward, no matter what effort you make to try to get it resolved. Or when, frankly, you just hate your job. You hate it. When your loved one dies. When your marriage, which you came into it with your dreams, all of a sudden now your dreams have sort of died and you're thinking, I just don't see any hope of resurrection here. Folks, that's when we need Psalm 40. That's precisely when you need it. I don't need an emotional high. That'll wear off and I'll be right back to where I was. Especially when, you know, suffering comes around, that third wave, that fourth wave, that 45th wave comes back around and just keeps hammering you over and over again. But this is when you've got to rest in what this psalm teaches you. And I'll be real candid with you, all right? About 2 weeks ago is when I started studying this more in depth. And something I've discovered is that God always makes me live what I'm going to preach before I preach it. And when I read this, the first thought was, oh no. What's going to happen? How's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? It's why I joke, but I'm halfway serious, why I'll never preach from the book of Job. I don't want to go through that. And sure enough, things start to come up. Things, plural, not just one thing. Just boom here, boom here, boom there. You know, before long, I'm tired. I just want to throw my hands in the air and say, you know what? No, I'm not dealing with this anymore. I do not delight to do your will right now, Lord. Not one bit. I just want to escape. And you do too. You do too. That's when I need to come to Psalm 40. I need to see it through a particular set of lenses. I need to see it through the lenses of what this tells me about Jesus Christ. There's something here. What this says about Him and how this really brings a ray of hope into life when you're getting assaulted like that. So be warned. I had to live this chapter every single day for about the last 9 days. Yesterday accepted. But every day you had to keep coming back and apply this. So there's some shoe leather on here. If everything else begins to fail and fall apart, what do? You can know this. You can come back to this. Your God has rescued you too. I've had to stand on that truth. I've had to come back and say, okay, God's rescued me in the past. I got to come back to this. And I got to walk in it. He showed us something. He showed us that when He became a human. And He began to dwell with us. And live with us. He sees. He feels. He knows what we go through. And I'll tell you something else. God didn't just merely lean, right? or just kind of get down. I mean, he became one of us. That's what we celebrate at Christmas. Emmanuel, God with us. So he's not just going to deliver some pithy quote or saying from a distance. He's been there and he knows. And there's a lot of comfort in that when I'm going through my trial and I go, okay, Lord, I know you know. And I know that you don't have a deaf ear to me right now. And he showed us that he knows what it's like to be in the miry clay. He's done that. In fact, what he's done for us is he's gone in the miry clay so that we can actually stand on his shoulders to get out. We stand on him. He's the deliverer from us. And Jesus has done wonders on our behalf too. In fact, the New Testament in particular specifically quotes from Psalm 40 speaking of him, where it says, I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. That was Jesus. That's what he did. He delighted. And he kept that law, and it enabled him to be faithful to his heavenly Father, even to the point of death on a cross. For both God's will and our sakes. That's why Hebrews 10 quotes this passage. Behold, I have come. In the scroll of the book, it's written of me to do your will, O God. That's him and what he's done. Isaiah, in speaking about the Messiah, put it like this in chapter 50. He said, the Lord's opened my ear, and I was not disobedient, nor did I turn back. And he didn't. I gave my back to those who strike me, and my cheeks to those who pluck out the beard, and I did not cover my face from humiliation and spitting. For the Lord helps me. Therefore, I'm not disgraced. I have set my face like flint, and I know that I will not be ashamed. That was Jesus Christ. And because he's done that, now what can I do? I can then go out and I can begin to proclaim his deeds, not only for my sake, but for others too, and say, let me tell you what he's done. Let me tell you how I've seen him work and how he's revealed himself. And so knowing that, you know, what Jesus has done, we find ourselves in exactly what verses 1 through 10 of this chapter have for us. That we can re-enter the reality of this world and its difficulties. And we can be strengthened as we remember God's delivered. He's done it before. He'll do it again. And I don't care if you want to talk about your money, your marriage, your jobs, your health, your safety, your church, your circumstances, your government. Whatever those items are, particularly that you don't have control over, he's still the deliverer. Have you forgotten? Have you allowed the circumstances to get so loud that you've forgotten? The cross is your reminder every day. God sees. He cares. The empty tomb is your reminder. He's got the power to overcome whatever that circumstance is. But he sees you and he knows you and he cares. He does. We're coming into Thanksgiving this week. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to apply Psalm 40 in a very particular way. We're not just going to trash talk. We're going to really do what this psalm has. So as Thanksgiving comes around, you know, frequently that's probably part of what we ought to be doing. Remembering first, Lord, what have you done? And then as we remember these things, we pronounce them. So here's what I've already done. If you go onto the city, you can even do it right now. I won't take offense on your little phone or your device. You go on the city, what you're going to find is I've already made a post. And on here it's titled Psalm 40 and how we've seen God work. And what you can do is you can just begin to follow my story and write your own of ways that God delivered you. And it could be anything. Maybe your salvation story. It may just be something that happened this past week or something that just really helped you in this past year. You know, whatever it may happen to be, it can be a very long thing. It can be a very short thing. Doesn't matter. But it's a testimony of God's salvation and how he's cared. That means you got to stop and remember. You got to reflect. And then you begin to share and to speak of it. And what I hope will happen is you begin to read one another's stories. And you begin to be encouraged. In fact, I'll give you this challenge. On Thanksgiving Day, when you gather everybody around, maybe you can print out a few of these that you're going to see on the city. And then you can begin to share some of other people's stories as well as your own about how God continues to deliver. He's defeated death. He's risen from the grave. He's given us the power to do His will and to obey, even in the midst of pain and suffering and difficulty. You can do this. And by doing this, one of the things I hope is that we build one another's faith. It's just like, you know, if we had time, I could bring each one of you up and put you right here and let you just give your testimony. Well, we're going to do it virtually. We're going to do it on the city. If you're not on the city, all you got to do is go right back there in that room. Little computer, you can just sign right in. It'll shoot you an email. You can go on and you'll have access. And you can read and you can submit your own story on what God has done. Now, one thing I want you to realize, when you reflect and you remember, that does not mean that God's going to take away what you got going on right now necessarily. You know, eventually, maybe. But He's not going to necessarily do it right this instant. In fact, things might actually get a little bit worse. And that happens at times. But I'll tell you what it will do. It's going to help you to get our eyes off of our pain and our circumstances and to just raise them. Raise our sights to Him and encouraging one another. Look up, not down. Be looking up to the one that not only sees you, but the obedient one who identifies with you and who loves you and who empowers you to be steady and faithful and obedient. And it might not be very efficient. It might not even be very quick in what He does. But you can live through it. You most certainly can, bringing glory to God. I'll end here with a story. A fellow that was living back in the frontier days. His wife was very ill, very sick. He knew he had to go to get to a particular doctor to get some medications for her. If he didn't do it, there's no telling what might happen. But it was winter time. It was a frozen lake, and he knew that to go around the lake was going to take too much time. The best bet would be to go straight through it. And so it's frozen, and he begins to go out on this, and he's scared to death. So he does like all of us. You know, you start by walking, and then if you're nervous, you kind of get down and try to make as much surface area on the ice as you can to distribute your weight throughout it so you won't crack through. Gets about a third, a little over a third of the way, and all of a sudden he hears this rumble. And he thought, uh-oh, this is it. So the ice is cracking on the perimeter, and it's rumbling as that crack makes its way out here into the center where I am. And I'm dead. And it got louder, and the rumble began to quake, and he could actually feel it within the ice as it began to shake. And he just you know, laid his head down knowing the end is near. And just absolute terror until he stopped and he looked up for a second. And that thunder was getting much louder. And at this point, he sees there's a team of six horses pulling a wagon riding across the ice. And this now once terrified man is one of the most bold men out there who knows, you know what? I think I'm going to stand and I think I'm going to hustle across this ice to go get what it is that I'm after and go get this medicine. The fearful became confident. And why did he do it? Because he knew if this ice will hold them, then it'll hold me as well. And my challenge to you this morning, do you want a greater confidence in God? Is that what you want? A steadiness? Here's what we need to do. Quit looking at the problems. Let's remember what God's done for us and cultivate our faith in Him and just see how thick the ice of Jesus Christ is. And another encouragement, maybe you need to start hanging out with people who are like six horse stagecoaches that are out there living for God and making the proclamation and showing that He's the one who delivers, that He is the solid rock that you can stand on as well. Friends, this Thanksgiving, let's be about that. Let's give the thanks. Let's remember. Let's get the word out there to one another. Let's be that wagon. And encourage and strengthening, reminding us that our God, He is able.